Oh, happy Friday, everybody. It is the last day of the month as we get ready for Pelicans basketball this evening, hosting the defending champion Boston Celtics. That's a 7 o'clock tip-off on 870 AM, 630 pregame coverage. We'll be cranking up. Also, getting ready for the big game. Super Bowl Sunday is next week. Anxious to get onto Radio Row for all the action there. And Monday night will be the big spectacle of media night in the Caesars Superdome.
Yes.
When you have, you know, reporters and, you know, I don't know if you would call podcasters journalists, just crazy questions though end up getting asked that night too.
WWE super fans, stuff like that.
Kids are in there. But I know one of the main attention on the stage in the Caesars Superdome on Monday night is going to be a pretty decent crowd around Eagles offensive coordinator Kellen Moore. There's been a big buzz around him being the favorite to land the Saints head coaching job. Nothing can become official until after February 9th, the Super Bowl is played. We saw what happened a couple years ago to the Arizona Cardinals when they did a little tampering. It was called with then the OC Jonathan Gannon for the Philadelphia Eagles, DC, sorry. And they ended up, like you mentioned, not losing draft picks, but having to do a swap on picks.
Yeah, and you know, if you're saying there's going to be a big crowd around Kellen Moore, I'll tell you someone who's not going to be crowded around Kellen Moore. That's 607. I don't want to say his full number. But, you know, he says, if they hire Kellen Moore, I'll become a Falcons fan. That hurts just to think it.
What is this blasphemy?
Why?
Yeah, exactly.
My question is, why? Why? And you know, you don't have to tell me like he's your favorite candidate or whatever. Why would you be so upset that you would stop watching your team because of a head coaching hire? And not only a head coaching hire, like a genuine, like, okay, this is a pretty solid get if you got Kellen Moore. Like,
literally a young offensive mind.
Yeah, like, I mean, and we're talking, you know, somebody said you want someone that's older than a player. And, you know, he is 36 years old. I will give you that. That is pretty young. It's, you know, it's just like Derek Carr is almost 36. Like Cam Jordan is almost 36. I'm aging them. Cam Jordan's 34.
Yeah.
Derek Carr's 33. Demario Davis is going to be 36. So you're right in that range. But, you know, you have to look beyond the age and say, okay, what has he done as a coach? It's not like you're hiring someone fresh out of college.
Look at the resume, right.
You're talking about a guy who's been an offensive coordinator in the NFL for 6 years on three different teams. That's not nothing.
Yeah, he did go from player to quarterbacks coach and then an offensive coordinator.
Right. He started a ton of games in college, won a ton of games in college, went and played in the NFL for 6 years, and now he's been a coach for, I don't know, I lost track of the years, but he's been offensive coordinator. He was in Dallas for 4 years, obviously went to the Chargers for a year, been in Philadelphia for a year. I mean, what is the resume you're looking for? Is it just like if he was 6 years older, you'd feel like, oh, the wisdom, he has it now. Like, no, if he's ready to be a head coach, he's ready to be a head coach. Something Babe Laufenberg mentioned yesterday, too. It's like he grew up, his dad was a high school coach. Like,
right.
He grew up with this. Like, this is his whole thing.
I love
his
the
whole
story,
identity.
The story, too, about when Boise State came to recruit him. He pulled out a notebook then of plays he had designed already, too.
Yeah, I recommend. So there's a John Gruden quarterback school. Remember the quarterback school?
Yeah.
It's like a 20-minute video of like John Gruden and Kellen Moore.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I'm definitely going to check it out.
Well, I mean, he's been around forever, and there's so much content of him. But he had
the
shaggy haircut and, you know, just the, you know, the everyone's talking about, oh, Boise State, they should be in a BCS game. And, you know, he's the reason. He's the reason that we had to start talking about the small schools.
Yeah.
He beat Derek Carr in college.
I was going to say, yeah, he was a senior and Derek was a sophomore.
Oh, someone says, that says he can't keep a job. Get out of here. He's literally in the Super Bowl as the offense. He went to the Eagles because they fired Brandon Staley last year.
And he was on that crew.
And he was on that staff. So he went and coached the Eagles and went to the Super Bowl. Mike McCarthy, you know, they don't say fired, but, you know, when you don't win the way that you're supposed to win, the first step is always fire the offensive coordinator. It's not the answer. Like, you look at what happened in Carolina. Did they fire Matt Rhule right away? No. They were like, Joe Brady, he's the problem. And they fired him. Well, where's Joe Brady? He's with the Bills. He's succeeding. Anyway, so I just think you need to look beyond, oh, he's 36 years old, and tell me, like, why is the 6 years that would make you feel a little better different? if he just started coaching 6 years later.
I do love the Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line because you do get the dichotomy of both sides of things. Right before that text you just read from 2575, hey guys, Big Fred from the West Bank. With all the talk about an unknown Phillies OC, wasn't there an unknown about Sean Payton when he was hired? And weren't we in the same shape with the roster then?
Yeah, I think Sean Payton was, what, 41, something in that range. He wasn't
as
much,
young, right.
He was not as young as Kellen Moore, but also not much older. He was an offensive coordinator for the Broncos, but he was only an offensive coordinator. I'm sorry, I said Broncos. For the Giants, he was only an offensive coordinator for three seasons, went to Dallas. He was the assistant head coach and quarterback's coach for a few years, and then ended up with the Saints. The funny thing is on Sean Payton's career list, it says he coached the Saints from 2006 to 2011 and then from 2013 to 2021.
What happened in that year?
I think he coached a high school team in Texas. It's just funny because they actually is listed as if he left and coached a high school team and then came back, which is what he did, but he was never not the Saints head. Anyway, it is kind of a weird thing. Liberty Christian is listed as their offensive coordinator.
Nice.
And then obviously he's with the Broncos now. So, there's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of corollaries between Sean Payton and Kellen Moore. I hesitate to say, like, well, that's a good thing because you're just trying to catch lightning in a bottle again. But, hey, maybe it'll work.
Here on Sports Talk, want to hear from you. Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. It's 504-260-1870. We're going to send things off to break and be back with more as we get ready for Pelicans basketball coming up on 870 AM, 630 pregame coverage, 7 o'clock tip-off against the Boston Celtics. Be back with more Sports Talk, though, right after this on WWL. Welcome back into here to Sports Talk, getting ready for Pelicans basketball, 7 o'clock tip-off on 870 AM, and we knew it, Jeff. Questionable Zion with an illness, and it is now confirmed he is out for tonight's game. Another game matchup in the Smoothie King Center that the home crowd does not get to see their superstar.
It's so crazy. I can't believe that happened. That's so unusual.
Yeah,
that he's not playing.
It's really disappointing considering he just spoke yesterday and we kind of heard him really being vehement about, I can play back-to-backs.
It's not a great look when you're hemming and hawing about, I want to play, and then the next day it's like,
I'm sick.
I can't play.
I don't know if the team's playing games, trying to, with the tank.
No, but you don't need to sit Zion to lose to the Celtics.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it doesn't make sense. You want to throw the home fans a bone and put your star out there.
I mean, I believe that he's sick. I do believe that he's sick. I don't know. If he was sick, did this happen today?
Meanwhile, DeJounte Murray with an elbow and whatever else he's dealing with, I'm sure is fine to go.
I don't know. It is what it is.
It's maddening.
It's frustrating, but hey, we've been here.
Head banging against the wall kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I do not know. I do want to, so we did get a text asking about Rizzy and where Rizzy is with the situation and why Rizzy hasn't taken a job. I think special teams coordinators are oftentimes going to be the last job you fill when you're talking about teams hiring coordinators. I don't think, no offense to the special teams coordinators of the world. It's not, oh my gosh, they hired that guy? What a great hire. You don't even know the guy's name half the time, right? So,
With Rizzy now, people do because he was the innovator behind the new kickoff rule.
Yeah, I think Rizzy is actually one of the more well-known special teams coordinators, especially now that he's been a head coach or interim head coach, right? And he is getting interviewed. He got interviewed by the Jets.
Right.
So people do talk about
you
him.
You did too, though.
That is true. That is true. I think they interviewed Jim Nagy for their general manager position. Like, they cast a wide net. And then that's not to say, congrats to Jim Nagy for interviewing for that job. But it seemed like they interviewed a lot of people for a lot of different things. So anyway, Rizzy, I think it's more just like, if he feels like he still has a chance at that Saints head coaching job, I don't think he's going to cut himself out of that equation prematurely.
Agreed, right.
Right, and to this point, it doesn't sound like there's a done deal anywhere. So we'll see how that goes. If he takes a special teams coordinator opening job somewhere else, I think that is pretty telling about where things probably stand and kind of the messaging that's going on around it. But I think there will be significant interest in Darren Rizzi. I would expect him to be a special teams coordinator in the NFL next year. If it's not on the Saints, it'll be somewhere else.
Yeah, I wonder if he does not get the head coaching gig here. If he's like, well, I've kind of had my time. It's, time to move on to somewhere else, being a little bit bitter about not getting the job.
Yeah. I mean, how many times are you going to get passed over? You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to retain him, but it probably will be tough to sell that to a guy that wants to be a head coach.
Was it you that posted on social media, what if, you know, the grand what if the Saints had just paid a little more to Dennis Allen to be the defensive coordinator and moved Darren Rizzi into the head coaching spot when that initially had gone through?
That is one of my bigger what ifs, because I think that the entire situation would have probably worked better if Rizzi had been the head coach. It would have never happened. You were never going to do it.
Right.
Like, you were coming off a season. You know, one of the things that happened in that last season under Sean Payton was Sean Payton missed a game due to COVID, and you went to Tampa Bay, and you won with Dennis Allen as your interim. Right? It's not really even an interim.
They shut him out.
Yeah, they shut him out in that game, right? And so, you know, you were never going to end up with Rizzi as your head coach. But I do think, based on what we saw last year and what we know about Dennis Allen as a defensive coordinator, it would have been a much better scenario, and I think you would have had a much better chance for success. I also don't think you would have probably ended up with Derek Carr as your quarterback, because one of the reasons you ended up with Derek Carr is because that was TA's guy.
We'll get an update more on the Pels and who's playing, who's not, right after the break. Checking in the Smoothie King Center with credentialed NBA writer Ali Cosell, one of our favorites, joining us right after the break here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Remind everybody, we are going to be live from Radio Row in the heart of New Orleans. It's WWL bringing you exclusive access to the biggest sports event of the year. Join Tommy, Newell, Dave, Scoot, and Sports Talk with Bobby Hebert, Mike D, and me, broadcasting live at the Morial Convention Center from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day next week. Hear the biggest names in sports, entertainment, and music, plus insiders' insights on unforgettable moments. We're your front row seat to the thrills and excitement of the big game. Keep it locked on your home for the NFL and the spirit of New Orleans, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and Soso. WWL and the free Odyssey app. Now checking in with Ali Cosell in the belly of the Smoothie King Center. Ali, how you doing tonight, man?
Doing great. Looking forward to this matchup, though. We just got news that, unfortunately, Zion Williamson's not going to play, stomach virus. So that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, especially we were talking about this. We saw it on social media with all the clamoring he was doing yesterday about being able to play back-to-backs. And, you know, it's just the team basically holding him back. We're kind of at a loss for words here, just the fact that the home fans have seemed to miss out so many of the games that he has been playing this year. Just five games total in the Smoothie King Center. Really disappointing he's not available for this matchup tonight.
Yeah, look, I mean, they're about to go on a road trip, right? Going to be gone for, what is it, about 8 days or so?
Yeah.
And the fact that it's now his third illness-related type of absence on the season, yeah, it's not a good look, right, for a player that claims that he's in the greatest shape. And you mentioned coming off less than 24 hours ago. Listen, and then look, we can see it, right? His conditioning looks probably as good as it's ever been.
Agreed.
Right, since entering the NBA and all this. And yet he still has a propensity for missing games. So you're right. It's just a bad look.
I did see him the other night at the Circle K grabbing some sushi, so maybe that's what that's a joke.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's a joke. All right, that gas station sushi keeps getting it. No, you know, Ali. So, you know, this is the time of the year where it's all about, hey, can you give me something entertaining to watch? And then if you lose, whatever, it's okay. But you know, give me some positivity. We just talked about Zion being sick; he's not going to play. What would you look at if I asked you? Okay, what are the top two or three positive things that the Pelicans can do the rest of the way? Why should I, as a fan, be excited about things that are happening?
Yeah, so number one kind of is, honestly, unfortunately, I mean, however way you want to look at it, but Zion Williamson, right, best shape of his career. We're seeing him do things on the court that we haven't seen before, and that's basically give you effort on both ends of the court defensively. And the thing that's really emerged now recently is the starting lineup, right, when Z's out there with DeJounte, CJ, Trey, and Eve, they're actually gangbusters. Offensively, offensive rating of close to 130, so that's 130 points per 100 possessions, which is outstanding. They're playing with amazing pace at a 106 pace. Again, 106 possessions per game, that's something you rarely see, right? So you love where potentially this team could be if they can all stay on the court together. So there's still, 34 games, I believe. So hopefully, more games than not, you'll get to see this fivesome out there, right, doing their thing and hopefully trying to improve defensively. That's where the drawbacks are right now. But for the rest of the year, I mean, you want to see Trey Murphy continue to build on an all-star campaign. You want to see if Eden Missy can overcome the rookie wall, right, which looks like it's affecting him, and see if he can finish the year strongly. Can DeJounte Murray, right, continue shooting the ball as well he has been like last few weeks, low turnovers? Can he be the guy, that point guard that I think we all think he can be for this team, that supposedly he's also made that switch with Zion Williamson in his brain to where he's made him care about both sides of the court? Right, so I think that relationship is panning out. But again, it all comes down to if these guys can just be on the court together, right? That's going to be the biggest marker. But if they can, yeah, there's plenty to look for.
Looking at this matchup tonight against the Boston Celtics, last go around, Pelly's played them tight. It was a good matchup. What can we hope to see from this team going into this matchup against the Celts this time around?
Yeah, it's crazy. There's been two recent one-point losses, right? Last game against the Mavericks, yep. And then that one up in Boston. And the biggest Achilles heel was defensive rebounding. In both of those games, the Pelicans grabbed less than two-thirds of the available defensive rebounds. And even with the starting lineup, right, that I just rattled off a few minutes ago, their biggest weakness is rebounding the ball. So you want to see these guys. I don't know whether it'll take DeJounte Murray getting you 8-9 rebounds, Trey Murphy maybe getting you double digits, but somebody's got to just flat out go out there and do it. Because that cost them, right, those two games wins, because they've given that many more possessions, more chances for the other team to shoot the ball. And the Mavericks got 32, right? Second chance points. You can't allow that. So that's what I'm going to be watching for the rest of the year. Can these guys kind of develop somebody, a Josh Hart mentality? Because that's what it's going to take. If this is the core going forward, somebody is going to have to emerge as a rebounder, at least a couple of guys, right? Uptick in their production on that end.
You know, Ollie, one of the things that kind of came out today that kind of struck me as odd, and I still don't think makes a ton of sense, is that the Pelicans are being named in the Jimmy Butler saga as a potential trade partner. And, you know, if he doesn't want to play in Miami, I can't imagine he wants to play in New Orleans, a team that isn't really going anywhere this year. I do wonder if it is a lot more to do with a three-team option or maybe kick it. But what is your reaction to all of that?
Yeah, I love your instincts. And I did some checking in when I saw that news earlier today. And from what I understand, the Pelicans do not have interest in Jimmy Butler to bring him here.
Right.
So it's not just do we have to worry about Jimmy Butler. It's the fact that they don't want to say whether it's moving off of Brandon Ingram or whoever. But you're right that they would be interested and have been with any team where they could facilitate, right, help a trade happen and use some of their salary that they want to get off of, like Brandon Ingram, right, since the summer. That, they, of course, there's always been interest in, but no. Jimmy Butler, New Orleans, no. I'll put that rumor to bed. I'm not believing it because I haven't heard that from my sources.
One of the rumors out there, too, saw that the Milwaukee Bucks was interested in a guy like Jose Alvarado. I was just wondering what you thought about that. Is that legit or kind of just, you know, maybe agent speak or whatever you got going on there? It doesn't make sense to me, at least for this team, to move on from a guy like Alvarado.
No, that's real. But here's the thing. There's a lot of teams out there that have wish lists, right?
Yeah.
And, of course, Jose's enviable for several reasons. One, he's impactful. Two, you look at the team that's wanting him, right? They need that defensive help. They need just players, the Bucks do. And then third, he's on a great contract. And the Bucks, they're already paying a heck of a lot of money. I believe they're either first or second apron team, right? So they're above the luxury tax even. So having a player that can help you on the court at low cost, you want those players. So I would bet, you know, pretty much every cent I've got in the bank account that the Pelicans aren't going to trade Jose Alvarado away, especially for future assets, right? What good will second round draft picks do for an organization when Jose Alvarado is here under great contract? City loves him, team loves him, right? He's one of these core locker room guys. It wouldn't make any sense. So I'm not buying that they would explore a deal like that at all. That's just a Bucks wish list.
Yeah, and I mean, just in general on the roster, obviously Brandon Ingram is the name. You're going to hear about Brandon Ingram getting floated around. Do you expect the Pelicans to be active beyond Brandon Ingram, or do you think they're kind of in a position where, yeah, this season went off the rails, but, you know, we feel like this core group is one that we want to bring back intact and not rebuild through the draft necessarily?
Yeah, one thing I can guarantee, they will make some kind of trade before next Thursday's trade deadline.
Right.
They simply have to get under the luxury tax. They've never paid it before. They're certainly not going to start doing it now in such a down season, right? And here's the thing. If they were to say stay over the luxury tax, they would also lose out on $18 million. It seems like that's the approximation of what every team that's under the luxury tax is going to get paid for all the teams that are over it, right? So that's too much money for a team like that that's losing. So of course, the hope is B.I. is going to get traded. But if they can't find a taker, I mean, maybe there's some chance that C.J. McCollum gets moved, but I wouldn't bet on that either. If anything, I would think it'd be somebody else on the roster, somebody that's making a lot less money. So I'm looking at maybe even a Jordan Hawkins, right? Team's got Brandon Boston, who they want to give a standard contract to eventually, Antonio Reeves. So is Jordan Hawkins just kind of repetitive for the roster? Or maybe some minimum guy. I've heard Javonte Green, he's got a lot of interest across the league, actually. So I could see him potentially moving on, too. But they're going to make some kind of deal, guys. I still don't know what it is.
Ollie, when you look at the team, you know, the Pels going into this matchup, too, what are you expecting to see just overall from the fans, like showing up? I know, one, the team is having a difficult go getting in the win column. And then right now with all the Super Bowl stuff going on, it's just a real hassle to even get to the arena.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's been a hassle for us media, right? You have to come extra early because there's extra more walking, right, involved where we're now parking like half a mile away or sometimes even more. So I'll tell you one thing. The basketball's been fun, right? I mean, once we got past that point where, what was it, they lost, I believe, 20 of 21. Right. There was a lot of, like, G-League types out there. I think the basketball's been entertaining. And you can see the future, right? Most of the guys outside of B.I. and Herb have been here playing games. And that's what you get excited about, right? You can see this offense can run with anybody. You can see the improvements they're trying to make with shooting more threes, running faster, right? All these things. So it's an exciting style of basketball, I think, with a bunch of young guys that are going to be here in New Orleans for a bit. And remember, it's not that they're perennial losers. Last year, this group won 49 wins. So I think they're going to get right back to it next season, provided, of course, they get the help. So the core, it's still exciting, right? So that's, I think, worth seeing.
Yeah, so, I mean, you think this, you know, this season, do you feel like it could be kind of a launching point for, like, the Grizzlies last year, I think would be a good example. Yes. Like, they lost Ja, they lost all these players, and they lost a lot of games. But you felt like, okay, there's quality here. You feel like that's the Pelicans can be that team next year. Maybe not as significant of a turnaround, but something in that range.
Yeah, there's no doubt, because like I said, what's given me hope is these early markers, like how well the starting lineup is playing, at least especially offensively. When you start seeing this team is now shooting more threes, they're actually taking, you know, the adherence of what the coaching staff's trying to tell them to do, and they're actually putting it to action. So you're seeing all these things starting to come together. Like I said, DeJounte Murray, who was in that funk, right, when he first came back, but now he's been playing much better. Trey Murphy, all-star. Future all-star, we all think. That's why, like I said, there's a lot of hope that they can be, right, the Memphis Grizzlies from just, you know, last year. Because they've got the talent, guys. They really do. They just need to fill in the holes in the roster where it just makes sense, right? They try to make B.I. and Z work forever. It just obviously hasn't come together. Now they're going to go in a different direction. And that's what you get excited about. You think that if they plug some certain holes up a little bit more, why not be a 50-win team?
Ollie, definitely appreciate your time as always, and enjoy the game tonight. Hopefully, like we're talking about, they're at least competitive, and who knows, maybe pull an upset against the defending champs.
That'd be fun, right? Because Boston hasn't, let's face it, been playing the greatest ball over, what, the last month, month and a half. So you would feel better if Zion was playing. But again, what if CJ goes off for 50, Trey's there with 30? It could happen.
Right. What ifs? We'll play that game for sure. I appreciate the time, Ollie, as always. Thank you, man.
All right, guys. Have a good rest of your night.
Thanks, you too. I was Ollie Cosell, credentialed NBA writer in the Smoothie King Center. And, I'm curious to see when they do the shot of the crowd, how many of those green jerseys we're going to see out there.
We'll see. And you know, it is funny. I've watched a fair number of Celtics games this year, and the Celtics kind of feel like they're in the Nuggets mode. The year after the Nuggets who won the championship, it was like, well, we don't need to win 62 games every year, right? Like, we just need to be the one or the two or the three seed, and then we're going to go. Like, and the Celtics, I think they're just kind of dialing stuff in. Like, in order to go win 60, 70 games, you got to be on every night. And it's like, it's an 82-game season. Like, we're 33-15 right now. We're fine. You know, it's like, we could be the one seed. The Cavs are way more invested in being the one seed right now. The Rockets are way more invested in being the one seed right now. And the Celtics are just kind of, like, hanging around, you know? So I think that does make them beatable. But I still think the Celtics are my team to win the whole thing.
I know you follow them pretty well. Are they doing they resting guys a lot during their stretch here?
No, the thing with the Celtics is, like, they built their whole thing on, we're going to shoot a heck ton of threes. like an insane number of threes, a level of threes to the point that there's going to be discourse around the NBA that we are ruining the game of basketball.
We got
to
move the line back.
Like, that's how many threes they're going to shoot. And then we're also going to play elite defense at all five positions. We're going to have five defensive stoppers, wings with long arms. We're going to get Drew Holiday. We're going to get Derek White, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. All these guys can defend every position. Put Kristaps Porzingis in there, and you won't be able to score. Now, the three part of that is going to be the same every night. You're going to rain threes on people.
Right.
The defensive energy and intensity over the course of an 82-game season is not going to be the same, but you're going to get them in the playoffs, and they're going to start playing playoff defense, and they're going to run roughshod through the Eastern Conference field, and it's going to be a question of, can the Cavs take them down? The Knicks are not going to compete. The Knicks do not have a chance to beat the Celtics in the playoffs. It's just going to be a question of whether the bigs in Cleveland can, you know, do enough, and the Donovan Mitchell can go off, because Donovan Mitchell is that type of scorer. But the Celtics are still the best team in the NBA, in my opinion.
Boston taking on the Pels. 6:30 pregame coverage, 7 o'clock tip-off. Catch it all on the Big 870 AM. We're going to take a break, be back with more sports talk, closing things out right after this on WWL. Oof, there's some bitterness on that Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, Jeff. Looking at 1-800 saying, didn't y'all say this crap about the Pelicans last year and the year before that? Hope. They suck.
They won 49 games last year.
49 game win season.
I mean,
that doesn't suck.
I guess, no, I did not say last year that they were bad and could use that as a launching pad for this year. I did not say that last year. I said they won 49 games. Hopefully they can get better. They didn't. Anyway.
Going to the Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, Larry from New Orleans wants to sound off. What you got for us today, Larry? How's your Friday going?
Baby, it's going good. Nice to hear both of y'all's voice. Thank y'all for checking me in, man. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
Happy Super Bowl week.
Thanks for calling in.
Getting back to what y'all was saying, young and old is only a number. It's what the guy can do for the Saints. And as long as Mickey Loomis is general manager, the Saints will never have nothing. He's getting his pockets full from Gale's money, and he don't care.
I don't know about not caring.
Last but least, go Philadelphia. Y'all have a great day. I appreciate y'all. Love y'all.
Thanks for the call, Larry. Right, fly, Eagles, fly. I'm with you on that one, at least.
I'll challenge you that Mickey cares. Like, Mickey cares. He's invested. Now, you could disagree with the things that he does and the decisions that he makes, but he cares. There's no question that he cares. I think he cares even a little too much at times. But, you know, I get the frustration. I do. You know, you gotta fix this. You gotta get back to the playoffs. You gotta give people a reason to cheer, and you just haven't had it. You know, and I think any GM in the NFL, when you miss the playoffs 4 years in a row, you're gonna get tough questions.
Yeah.
And the thing for Mickey this offseason, I don't know if people are satisfied with the answers. And you know, if you don't get this coaching hire right, the answers won't really matter all that much, because then the direction is different. So
yeah, I get the anger too. You talk about the aging roster, and then all of a sudden, you know, the cap situation has been a problem for years, and we kept talking about, you know, kicking the can down the line.
We are down the line, right? We have found the end of the line, and it is here, and it's just a question of how you dial it back. The can is we put the lid is on the can. And how do you throw the can? You roll the can? I don't know. The can is not getting kicked anymore.
I do want to ask you, we were going to have like a Senior Bowl show today. We kind of glossed over that, didn't really get into things.
What's that?
Just wondering, you know, you were out there for some of those practices in Mobile.
I was.
What were some of the players that might have impressed you that could be, you know, potential on the Saints radar?
Oh, man, a lot of them. Jack Besh, I think, is elite. I think he's
the real deal.
I did not expect him to be as elite as he was in that setting. He was just mossing people. He made, like, Jalen Milrow did not play well. Like, right. He did not show well, but anytime he threw it to Jack Besh, it was like a 60-yard bomb. So Jack Besh, elite. Jaden Higgins, Iowa State wide receiver. He's going to make some team very, very happy. He's 6'3", moves really well. You know, I was watching him, and I was like, man, that guy must be small. Like, he was Tez Walker. Tez Walker, is that his name? Out of Oregon. He's like 5'9", 163, 156. And I was like, yeah, he's fast, but he's tiny. And I saw Jaden Higgins running, and I was like, he must be small because he's moving so well. He's going so fast, he's leaving people in the dust. 6'3", 210. So, like, you know, that's the type of body I want. Xavier Restrepo out of Miami, really impressive. You know, just that short area quickness guy, can get open in a phone booth. Really liked him. Dorian Strong, cornerback out of Virginia Tech. He's just glued to people. And he, I think he clocked in at like 21.6 miles per hour. He was like the third fastest player on the opening day. I don't know how that the speeds tracked over the final 2 days.
Right.
But no, he elite. And then I think probably Gray Zabel was the two players who I would put as like the MVPs. Gray Zabel, offensive line. Played all three interior line spots, dominated North Dakota State. Guys might not know him. He's going to be either a late first round, early second round pick.
Okay.
And then Elijah Arroyo, another guy, Miami. You watch these Miami guys and you understand why Cam Ward was as dominant as he was, because he's thrown to these dudes. Elijah Arroyo, at one point, I thought he was a wide receiver because he was just running by people. You know, no one covered him all week. He's got size, 6'4", 250. So I think he has a chance. But that's who I would name.
Thanks for the quick wrap-up, Jeff. Had a fun Friday show, and we'll be back Monday from Radio Row at the Convention Center as we get ready for Super Bowl 59. Coming up at 6:30 on 870 AM pregame coverage, Pelicans taking on the Celtics. Stay tuned on WWL.